Welcome back to our second presentation on Introduction to Bonds. And in this presentation, we will discuss the various types of bonds, the major categories, from the least riskiest to the riskiest. And we'll also take a look at a few other attributes, bond quotes, bond credit ratings, scores, credit scores, bond ratings. So let's get started on slide 25 with treasuries. Treasury bonds, government bonds, T-bonds, T-notes, remembering that notes are 2 to 10 years, whereas bonds are typically greater than 10 years, but yours truly and many other people will just use the term bonds for both notes and bonds. These are the safest of the safe, folks. Sometimes you'll hear the term flight to quality. When the world is going through a tough time, many traders, many speculators, short-term investors, that's sort of an oxymoron, short-term investing, will sell everything they have and run to treasury bonds. Yeah. And then you may remember from chapter one when you did the treasurydirect.gov assignment that also available through the treasury are TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. Not to be confused with the T-bills, the I-savings bonds. It's Treasury Savings Bonds, the I-series, which were also inflation protected. And then bonds that are not direct obligations of the United States Treasury, but there's an implicit guarantee that was always unsaid, and the folks in the government said, no, these are not backed by the Treasury, but when the organic matter hit the Ventolin device, they were. And those are called agency bonds. They're associated with various private entities, such as Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Sally Mae, which now has a new name, I don't remember. And these were organizations that were sponsored by the Congress, but spun off. And for decades, the mantra was that no, there are private enterprises, and if those bonds go under, the United States government is not. We can talk about this a little bit later. Treasuries are exempt from state and local taxes. Why? Because the Constitution says the feds can't tax the states. The states can't tax the feds, and likewise. And that's why municipal bonds are free from federal income tax. Treasury Inflation Indexed Obligations, TIPS. These are a type of treasury security that provides protection against inflation by adjusting investors' returns for the annual rate of inflation. Now, initially, these things pay far less than other treasuries, but here's the deal. If there's inflation, the par value is adjusted upward to keep pace with inflation. Ha-ha! So you don't get paid in interest. Your bond is now worth more. And the interest payment on the next year goes up on the new principal. However, you must pay taxes on the interest and the increase in the par value, sometimes called the phantom income, even though you did not receive the increase in par value as cash. Interesting. You see what's going on here? You might have gotten an extra $10 on your $20 or whatever on your treasury bond because it went up in value because of the inflation. But you didn't get that in cash. They didn't send you a check. They didn't put any money in your account. But the IRS says, you got to pay taxes on that. And for that reason, some people like to put them in retirement accounts, which are tax-deferred, or in the case of the Roth, tax-free. Slide number 27. Now, these agency bonds, mortgage-backed bonds, pass-through securities, participation certificates, collateralized mortgage obligations, collateralized debt obligations, mortgage-backed securities, they go by various names. But these are those bonds that are issued by those agencies that were spun off from the federal government, from the Congress, and they are typically used, the biggest use is home mortgages. because the Congress wanted to, encourage people to buy homes. So they wanted to make mortgage money available. And so they sponsored these entities. And you may have heard of Ginny Mae, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. Then the Sallie Mae was for student loans. So here's the deal, right? These people sell these bonds, and they're used to buy mortgages. We'll see on the next slide. They are backed by the mortgages that people are paying on their homes, and they get a very good rate. The bonds, investors like these things. Why? Because for many years, the implicit guarantee was that if anything went wrong, the government would step in, and of course the Congress politicos said no, yes, when the organic matter hit the ventilating device in 2008 and 2009, and all the people started going through foreclosure, and now you and I as citizens of the United States of America are proud owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And you know what? They've actually been very, very successful. They're sending tens of billions of dollars to the Treasury every year. But do we really want to have a situation where the government is basically in the mortgage business? That's socialism! No, we don't. We really don't. We believe in market-based economy, free enterprise, capitalism. But the problem is nobody can now agree on how do we extricate ourselves from this situation. And so the old saying is that if it ain't broken, don't fix it. But in this case, someday, maybe not, who knows. That's why I'm not in politics. As we say in the bottom here, for decades, Fannie and Freddie were very successful, very, very popular investments. You could buy stock in them, and for many years many people did, but they were hit very hard in the 2008 and 2009 crisis. Not as hard as some of the other lenders who disappeared, like Countrywide and Accredited Home Mortgages. But much of the crisis in the 2008 and 2009, as we said when we were talking about the bubbles back in when we were talking about stocks, it was surrounded these mortgage-backed securities, because they were, hang on a minute, let's get to the next slide here. You know, there used to be a day when the homeowner would go to the mortgage company, the bank, the savings and loans are all gone, credit unions, and they would take out a loan. The bank would lend the money to the homeowner, and the homeowner would make payments to the mortgage company. Life was simple. And maybe you've seen It's a Wonderful Life at Christmas time. Well, it ain't that simple anymore. Doing! You see, your bank, your credit union, the mortgage company, you think they're actually the company you're dealing with. No. They made the loan, but they turn around and sell it to Fannie or Freddie. They're the two biggies, and I think it's 70-some percent of the home mortgage market they command. And they buy the mortgage, and the money goes back into the bank or credit union, which can now use it to make more mortgages. So indeed, it's liquefying, providing liquidity to the home mortgage market so that more people can have houses, and that's generally a good thing. We like people to own their homes. And so what does Fannie and Freddie do with these mortgages? Well, they bundle them into bonds. They take 1,000 mortgages and they all squish them together into one bond issue. And they sell them to individuals and institutional investors all around the world. And so what happens? You're paying your mortgage payment to the bank. The bank is then passing through the mortgage payment to Fannie and Freddie, who then turns around and sends that interest and principal, by the way, to the investors. And, some investors are individual investors, and some are money market and life insurance companies and other institutional investors. So the investors buy the bonds, and they receive the pass-through payments from the homeowners. It is called securitization. It like anything we humans have done, is not perfect. But it has worked extremely well in many situations. And apart from the Great Recession, the global financial crisis, it's actually done pretty well. But there's the one time that it fell apart, and now, as we said, you are proud owners of Fannie and Freddie, and they're actually contributing billions of dollars to the Treasury, and how are we going to extricate ourselves from this situation? I have no idea. Anybody who thinks they do know, I think is deluding themselves. So if this political football is something that's interesting to you, just go to any search engine on the Infernal Net and type in Fannie, Freddie, how do we remove them from the government? What do we do with them? And you'll get various articles from many different smart people who think they know what we can do to extricate ourselves. We'll see. Slide number 29. The process, as we said, is called securitization. It's the process of transforming lending vehicles, such as mortgages, into marketable securities, into bonds that are then sold to individuals and institutions, and they receive the monthly, these bonds typically pay monthly, or they could pay quarterly or every 6 months, but because they're like mortgages, they kind of pay like mortgages. And as we said, they've been very successful. So that has spread into what are called asset-backed securities. So the ones that have to do with mortgages are often called MBS, mortgage-backed securities. And then any type of securitized asset can be called asset-backed securities. So they're similar to mortgage-backed securities, but they're backed by bank loans or leases or other assets such as car loans, credit card loans, patents, stocks, and bonds, and even David Bowie. Yes, you read that right, heard that right. The artist, David Bowie, said, look, this is back in the 80s, right? He said, I'm David Bowie. I'm fairly successful, which he was. I would like to, I think it was $55 million, which in the bond world is actually a pretty small issue. But he said, I need $55 billion to augment my artistry, and I'll pay you guys whatever the interest rate was. I don't remember. The world was very skeptical. Okay, all right, you know, you're not Walmart, you're not Home Depot, you're not Nike, you're David Bowie. And there was some, you know, consternation about whether or not he would actually pay them back. And he did. The bonds got paid back in full. Another artist group you might have heard of called REM did the same thing. And with similar results, they paid them all back. I don't know why you would need $55 million if you're an artist, but he did something with them and he made money and he was able to pay his bonds back. These are sometimes called collateralized bonds obligations or structured investment vehicles, but they basically all work the same way. Somebody, something says, hey, we are going to pay you a certain amount of money every quarter, every 6 months, every month, whatever, typically 6 months, and we'll pay you the principal back when the bond matures. Cool. The next major category is called municipal bonds. The next major category consists of municipal bonds. Munis, muni bonds. These are debt securities, which is a fancy word of saying loans that can be traded, issued by states, counties, cities, political subdivisions such as water authorities, hospital, bridge authorities, toll roads, or community colleges, Southwestern Community College. And most all municipal bonds are tax exempt at the federal level, right? The states can't tax the feds can't tax the states. However, if you make a capital gain, capital gains are not tax exempt. It's the interest that's tax exempt. Now, you have to be careful. If you are subject to the AMT, the alternative minimum tax, there are some muni bonds that you find are not tax exempt. And if you are subject to the alternative minimum tax, you really need to, you know, talk with your financial advisor if you have one, or dig deep and make sure that the the bonds that you buy or the mutual funds that you buy don't have any of these AMT eligible muni bonds. Yep. Municipal bonds are very popular with individual investors, especially high income and high net worth investors. I remember when Southwestern College was putting out these bond issues because the voters had approved the bonds to be sold and were going to destroy the campus and rebuild it much uglier than it was before. But I remember one at one of the big Mahatma meetings, one of the governing board members saying, "We really need to get the word out to the folks in the South Bay so they can invest in Southwestern Community College." And I'm looking the back on, he doesn't really understand. No. You know, maybe folks in Coronado, which believe it or not is in our community college district, some folks in more wealthier areas of our county, of our part of the county, but no. The folks in Del Mar and La Jolla's Rancho Santa Fe, they are buying the bonds, right? Because as we're going to see in our next chapter, it really doesn't make sense for most of us to buy muni bonds because they pay less interest. Sometimes they pay actually pretty good interest, so in which case then that's a good deal. But they usually pay less interest. What we need to know is what the taxable equivalent yield is, and we're going to learn how to calculate that in the next chapter. And you'll find that for the vast majority of us working grunts, they're really not that great a deal. But they generally pay their interest and pay back the principal. So that's something they said for that. And some muni bonds are insured by insurance companies, which of course is a desirable feature. And in one of the examples on the website and in Canvas, you'll see a muni bond that is insured. Cool. What are the different types of municipal bonds on slide 31? Well, you have basically three types. Actually, there's a couple more, but these are the big three. GOs, general obligation bonds, revenue bonds, and then these special tax situations. Now, GOs, general obligation bonds, are backed by the full faith, credit, and taxing power of the issuer. Cool. That means if you're the state of California and you have a general obligation bond, you have to exhaust all the opportunities for taxing your citizens to pay these bonds. Whereas a revenue bond, no. A revenue bond requires payment of the principal and interest only if the sufficient revenue is generated by the issuer. For example, the bridge across the bay, this Coronado Bay Bridge, they sold revenue bonds, and for the 20 some odd years, 30 years, that they charged a toll to cross the bridge, that money went to pay off the bonds. And then once the bonds were paid off, they kept the toll for a few years to create this pool of money to maintain the bridge, but now the bridge is free, right? So you would think that these would be less desirable than general obligation bonds. And typically that's what many people believe. They typically will pay more interest because, of course, the general obligation bonds, the entity, the state, the city, the state, the school district, they have to exhaust all their resources to make sure that they pay these bonds off. Whereas the revenue bond is dedicated to the bridge or the water authority or to the hospital or whatever it is. But I've talked with some very, very smart people, because I'm really never bought bonds myself, only through mutual funds, who say these are mutual fund managers who run bond funds. They say, no, we love revenue bonds. You do your due diligence, which is a fancy way of saying dig deep and make sure you understand that this project is going to pay for itself, and you'll get a much better interest rate. And so they say, oh, we love revenue bonds. But they have tremendous resources. They have billions of dollars to invest from millions of investors around the world. So they know what they're doing. At least they have in the past. We hope they continue to be successful. Now, what are these special tax bonds? Well, we've already made mention of them. At Southwestern Community College went to the voters and said, hey, you know, we're Southwestern Community College and we want to destroy the camp. I'm sorry, we want to revamp the campus. I'm sorry, it's a sickness, I can't help it. And so will you allow us to do that? And the voters said, okay. Now, did the voters really understand what was going on? I don't think so, some of them. They didn't understand that the taxes were going to go up on the properties in the Southwestern Community College District to pay these bonds over the next 30 years. But that's why they're called special tax bonds, and the voters had to approve it. So that's how that works, right? So in many ways, it's kind of like a revenue bond, or in that the revenue from the property taxes are paying the interest and the principal. And we're going to see a auxiliary presentation in this chapter for Poway, the city of Poway. Same idea, the Poway School District. Not the city, I'm sorry, the school, Poway School District that had these special tax bonds. And they were, for a bit, not very popular. And so, but they all got paid. They all did very well. But during the Great Recession, during the global financial crisis, many investors were very, very skeptical of these special tax bonds in the case of Poway School District anyway. Now, what are the advantages of muni bonds? As we said, they're free from federal income taxes. And so in the next chapter, we'll learn how to calculate the taxable equivalent yield. And if the investor is domiciled in that municipality, fancy way of saying if you live in the state, then the state will usually waive, W-A-I-V-E, the taxes on the interest. So, for example, California taxpayers, if they buy a bond anywhere in the state, doesn't have to be in your hometown, anywhere up and down the state, then California says, cool, you don't have to pay income tax on the interest payments. So we call this double tax-free, double tax-exempt. The IRS doesn't really like the term double tax-free. They get upset when you use that, so double tax-exempt. And we will learn how to calculate the taxable equivalent yield for both federal and state income tax. The higher the tax bracket of the investor, the higher the taxable equivalent yield, and that's why we said they're more popular with high net worth, high income individuals. And also, as we've said, capital gains, if any, are never tax exempt. Now, the next category down the risk versus reward spectrum are the corporate bonds. And they have their own pecking order. They have secured mortgage-backed bonds are examples, secured corporate bonds, which basically have some type of collateral behind them. And then there are unsecured debentures. And I've heard it said both ways, and I'm not really sure which one's right. And I never, when somebody points out the right way, I always forget anyway. But even within the secured bonds, there's a pecking order. Senior lien bonds, senior bonds are backed by a claim on the specific property of the issuer, such as real estate or airplanes or railroad equipment. And then there are junior bonds, which are behind the senior bonds. The senior bonds have to be paid off first, and then the junior bonds. You see what's happening? If there's ever a bankruptcy, everybody gets in line and gets paid in the order in which they were in line. But the debentures are only backed by the full faith and credit of the corporation. So obviously, a mortgage-backed bond, a senior bond would be more desirable and hence will pay a lower interest rate. An unsecured bond would be less desirable but should pay you a better interest rate because you're taking on more risk. And there are income bonds, which are similar to the revenue bonds in the municipal bond world. They are unsecured bonds requiring that interest be paid only if a certain amount of income is earned. So it's similar to the revenue bond. And of course, they're going to be the most riskiest. Next category, we've hit the bottom of the barrel, and these are high yield bonds or non-investment grade bonds. Everybody just calls them junk bonds. They are high-risk securities that have low ratings, but you're getting it, right? They can produce high yields. So it's very similar to somebody going to a bank and they have a bad credit rating. The bank is going to charge them a whole lot more interest because the bank knows there's a pretty good percentage of these people who are going to wind up not paying. And the same thing is true for junk bonds. They're issued primarily by corporations, but now and then you'll see municipal junk bonds, which is what we're going to see when we take a look at the Poway. They were basically rated junk. Traditionally, these are reserved for bonds that were in distress. But in the 1980s, junk bonds became an entire industry as companies not large enough to issue bonds began to issue bonds with very high interest rates. And there was one company called Drexel Lambert. Oh, I'm forgetting the middle guy. Drexel Lambert and one guy, Michael Milken. Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky. And that's the movie you've heard of, Wall Street. And then they made a second movie. But that was the movie it was based on. Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky. And you can look them up. There's quite a bit of information about them. They were basically doing insider scamming, insider trading, and they were using junk bonds to get the money to do the insider trading. They used a company that's actually based here in San Diego called Vagabond Inns. And you've probably maybe seen, you might see one now. You'll notice it because there's not that many of them. But they were issuing bonds paying 16% and stuff. You know, that's really dangerous. This was, of course, when bonds were paying 7-8% in 1980s. Some were paying upwards of 9%, but still, it was very, very high. Very high risk, but also often the opportunity for large capital gains as well as high income, because if the company tends to do well, right, the interest rates will fall, the bond prices will go up, and they actually start to look like stocks. They are often have what's called a high correlation, and we'll talk about correlation in a few weeks, with stocks. So these junk bonds tend to follow the stock market more than they follow the bond market. Very dangerous, but what do we know? Risk versus return. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Personally, I'm not a big fan of junk bonds, but that's why there's chocolate and vanilla and some people like pistachio. Slide 35. Now, zero coupon bonds. We should really stop right here and say those, that was the risk versus return. Now we're going to talk about a few different types of bonds. And zero coupon bonds, it's a funny name, isn't it? Zero coupon. Well, remember coupons, interest payments, clipping the coupon? Zero coupon bonds don't have any interest payments. Huh? Well, remember the savings bonds that you bought for $50 and then eventually they became $100. It's the same idea. They are sold at a deep discount from the par value. And instead of receiving the interest in cash, the bond simply accrues. That's the word we use. It's from the accounting word. It means grows, increases in value until maturity. So, for example, if you had a $1,000 bond maturing in 20 years, and it was paying 6.25% a year, when you bought it, it would only cost you $300. And in 10 years, it would be worth $550. And then in 20 years, you would get your $1,000. So you're getting an increase in the value of the bond every year. Now, you don't get paid that amount, but look at what the IRS says. What are the disadvantages? Well, they're very sensitive to interest rate changes, exhibiting wide price rings. But again, if you hold the bond until maturity, you don't care what happens with the interest rates. But here's the thanks a lot, guys. You know, you got to know the IRS just has a great sense of humor. The IRS expects you to pay taxes on the accrued interest even though you didn't receive it in cash. So there's that idea of phantom income again, right? The bond went up $10, $20 or whatever, and they expect you to pay income tax on that when you didn't receive it in cash. So for that reason, people put them in their tax-sheltered accounts, such as IRAs or Roth IRAs or And also there are zero coupon muni bonds. Ah, of course. Muni bonds are exempt from interest income tax. So the zero coupon bond would not be taxed because it wasn't going to be taxed to begin with for because of the income. Cool. So remember that because there are going to be a couple of questions on the assignment that are going to make you think, and they're going to ask you about this zero coupon bond. So you're going to have to remember what a zero, what's different about a zero coupon bond, okay? Because we want you to think. I know it's a terrible thing to make your students think, but that's what we want you to do because we want you to be awesome. And that includes critical thinking and whatever that means, using your noggin. Slide 36. Okay, foreign bonds. Well, for many years, and still, most people just don't buy bonds outside the United States. It involves, you know, changing your currency from the dollar to whatever currency that they are in, denominated in. And for that reason, some countries and some companies in other countries will have, they will issue dollar-denominated bonds. They will issue a bond in dollars, even though, you know, they have to work in a different currency. But they'll say, you know, you U.S. investors, if you buy our bonds, we'll pay you interest in dollars. You pay us dollars, we'll pay you interest in dollars, and we'll pay you the principal back in dollars. And some of them have worked out okay. Some of them have been disasters if their currency collapsed relative to the dollar because it made them crippled them. And so some of these things have not worked out for the countries and companies that got involved, and in some cases, the investors. But most do. Most work out. They're very happy to accept our dollars and pay us back in dollars. But if we want to buy a bond in a other currency, we have to think about the same thing we thought about when we were talking about foreign stocks. We incur that currency fluctuation risk. And all their things being equal, and they never are, if the dollar rises relative to the foreign currency, the value of the bond will fall. If the dollar falls, then the value of the bond will rise. It's that seesaw effect again. And it's just very difficult for an individual investor to purchase, to do the research that is necessary. And for that reason, it is best done, in my humble opinion, via a global bond mutual fund, because the mutual fund managers have tons of resources and they have people all around the world speaking different languages, knowing the different cultures and the like. Yeah, that's just for you and me, grunts. But hey, if we got plenty of cash, we could hire somebody who knows what they're doing. But that's why they're mutual funds, folks. Slide 37. Okay, so we've gone through from risk, the least riskiest to the riskiest. Then we've looked at zero coupons and we've looked at foreign bonds. Now let's take a look at a few other aspects of bond investing, and that's the bond rating. We've been dancing around this, talking about credit ratings and the like. Well, you and I get a number between, it's from a company called Fair Isaac, FICO, people refer to it as. And it's between 350 and 850, and who knows how they do it. It's kind of goofy why they go from 350 to 850. I don't know. But bonds are not rated by numbers. They're rated by letter ratings. And there's a few rating agencies, the two biggest being Standard & Poor's, you remember, S&P 500, and Moody's, another, and there's a couple others, Fitch's and Weiss, but these are the two biggies. And the higher the rating, of course, the better the quality of the bond. But supposedly they've gotten better, but I tend to think of them like the idiot lights on your dashboard. Now, the idiot lights on your dashboard of your car have gotten better, at least that's what I'm told. I'm not a motorhead, but when I was growing up, we were told if the red light for the oil comes on, just keep driving. You only got a couple miles before the engine seizes. So, no. Now, if the little red light comes on, the oil light comes on or whatever, the heat light, stop, pull the car over because they're supposed to be a whole lot better. But in the wake of the 2001-2002 corporate scandals, the rating agencies were caught completely off guard. They didn't downgrade Enron and WorldCom until they were practically in default, in bankruptcy. And then they were again called to task because of the 2008 2009 mortgage-backed bond crisis. Yep, you guessed it. They screwed up again, but this time they almost brought down the entire economy. They were giving the highest ratings, AAA, to these liar loan mortgage-backed securities. I mean, people just walked in and said, yeah, I'm making $100,000, even though they're only making $35,000. They didn't bother to check how much money they were making. They didn't call their employer. And sure enough, these things went belly up, and so did our economy, almost completely went belly up. Ugh. And here they are, dear students, figure out, if you can figure it out, it can never, I mean, it reminds me of eggs, right? They say double A eggs or triple A eggs or double BB eggs. What's the difference? You know, they're eggs. But the same thing here. Triple A is the highest grade, and only a few companies, and it used to be that the United States government was triple A, now we're double A plus. Double A, BBB. Now, once you get below BBB, you are no longer investment grade. Oh, no, 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 no. BB and below, BBB. I'm sorry, BB, B, CCC, CC, CD, no F. You are in the realm of non-investment grade, speculative, distressed, in trouble, junk bonds. And once you get down here, again, it's like, in my humble opinion, once they're down here, it's too late. And, if you haven't sold your bond by now, you're probably going to get hosed. And notice Moody's doesn't do it exactly. They do AAA, and they go BAA, BAB, CAA. It's kind of, I don't like it. But I'm not in charge, so I don't make the decisions. But you understand the idea? AAA, highest grade. Double A, great. Double A is really good. Triple B is the minimum investment grade. And then once you cross that line, B, 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 C, 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 D, you're in trouble. You're junk. You're speculative, distressed. Okay. And then to further fine-tune their ratings, they'll add a plus sign or a minus sign. So AAA, AA plus, AA, AA minus, A plus, AA minus, BBB plus, BB, etc. And then Moody's adds a 1 or 2 or a 3. I think it's kind of silly, but I don't get to make the rules. By the way, Southwestern Community College, last time I checked, was AA minus, which means, we're doing okay. We're investment grade, and we're higher than BBB, certainly. How about bond trading? Well, what we're going to find, us grunts, us working individuals, stiffs, the little people, is that bond trading is actually very difficult for us. Trading volume is often thin because most people buy their bonds and hold on to them. Most trading is done over the counter, meaning you got to find some broker that hands them or has a client that has them. Bond traders normally trade in the $100,000 range. Expect poor prices for transactions under $10,000. Unless you're big, you're not going to be treated very well. And when we see the little presentations for the bond advertisements, you're going to see minimum amount $25,000. In other words, you come in with $1,000. I want to buy one bond. Get out of here. We don't want to talk to you. There is an exception, though. If you remember treasurydirect.gov, you get the same price with your $1,000 to buy a bond that the big boys and girls on Wall Street get. So there's the exception. But for the most part, we little people just don't buy individual bonds. That's why we like bond mutual funds. And then bond quotes. Of course, we can never make anything easy. Bonds are not quoted the same way stocks are, where you see the dollar and the pennies. No, instead, they are quoted as a percentage of par. What does that mean? Well, if you see 97.25, that means 97.25% of the par value. In this class, even though in the real world, some are 5,000, some are 10,000, in this class, par value is going to always be 1,000. So all you do is move the decimal point one to the right, and that means $972.50, right? Some simply multiply the 97.25 times 10. Okay, so see, remember that? Yes, some bonds are denominated in 5,000, some are denominated in 10,000, but don't worry about that. In this class, we will always use 1,000. 97.25 is a bond quote for a bond selling at a discount, right? It'll be less than 1,000. A bond selling at a premium would be quoted over 100, and a bond selling at par would be quoted at 100. Now, there are very few places where you can actually get free bond quotes. Why? Because most bond investors have their own private brokers, and they have their own systems. It's not like going to Yahoo. Yahoo doesn't even do it anymore. Morningstar, it's interesting. This place that we're going to use, FINRA, actually uses Morningstar for their bond quotes. But if you go to Morningstar.com, you can't find it. You can't find the same place that they give the bond quotes that they do on FINRA. Now, who's FINRA? Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. That's the nonprofit group that watches over the brokers and the brokerage firms. So there's a quote, there's a link on the website and Canvas that allows you to go to FINRA. And there's a presentation on how to use it too. So again, we would stop right now and do that. But you're going to do that on your own because you're awesome. Cool. Makes sense. And that, dear students, is our introduction to bonds. Bond basics, the relationship of interest rates and bond prices, the different types of bonds, bond ratings, and trading and quotes. Now, your assignment on the website and in Canvas is to go in there and do a little bit of digging. Not a whole lot because there's not too many places we can actually find information on bonds. But you're going to find some bonds using the FINRA website, which is actually Morningstar. And you're going to do a little bit of research and find some information about other bonds. And I hope you find that it's not too boring, especially after stocks. But that's bonds. Boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds. In chapter 9, our next chapter, we're going to now learn about bond yields and valuations, and learn how to do the yield calculations. This is important for municipal bondholders, the taxable equivalent yield calculations. And we're going to find that, bonds are kind of boring, but there's a little bit of excitement with bonds. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. Cool. Stick with us. Think of how much you've learned and where you've come from. We're so, so proud of you. Be awesome, dear students.